So the meals you fed them were, did you guys have to prepare the meals on the plane or did they come prepared?
No, mainly what they were these, I can't remember, I can't think of the name, what you called them, but they were brown with frosting on the top, the breakfast roll kind of thing. And then they served a lot of those on the morning flights. And that was another thing. We were all so poor. that we were able to take the leftovers off the airplane. I got so sick of those things, but it did the job. It kept us going. And then on the afternoon flights, we'd have sandwiches. Everything, but they were all made up beforehand. We didn't have to do that. And then for the coffee, we had these big thermoses of coffee that were already made, so we didn't have to make those either. But but it wasn't real fancy or anything, you know.
So maybe describe the career trajectory. You said that you ended up chief of the Anchorage stewardesses. How did you get to that point from only being there a month
Oh,
to eventually staying and becoming the
well,
head
I
of the
never did
stewards
go
group?
back to Seattle.
I understand that, but I mean, what was the progression
Oh,
to that point?
well, I would just, the girl who had been I've been flying for, I'd say eight, five, about 4 years, I guess, before, and they needed somebody to take over as the chief stewardess in Anchorage, and so I got the job. I was kind of appointed.
So you came in 1954. You started flying out of Seattle, and by 55, you were living in Alaska. And how many years did you continue to work?
I worked for 9 years.
For 9 years. And was this an unusually long time at that time for a stewardess, or was that normal?
No, not really. Because a lot of the girls I started with were still flying. In fact, one of the girls, well, they had to change their used to be if you got married, you had to quit. And then when I was chief stewardess and I was hiring, they had to sign a paper that they would quit when they were 35. But Hazel, what's Hazel's last name? I can't remember. She started in 1940 something, and she didn't retire until she was 75 or something like that. So she flew all that time. But in the meantime, she was able to get married, and so, but when I quit in 1963 when I got married, and I had to quit then because I was getting married.
So they made you quit? How
That
did.
was part of the deal, that you couldn't fly and be married.
How did you feel about that at the time?
That was fine with me. Yeah, it was fine. I was ready to do something else. And I still got to travel because the man I married loved to travel, so.
Describe some of your fellow stewardesses.
Well, we had Glenna, who was ended up my roommate. Well, my first roommate was Fran Braun. She was from the Midwest, I think. She was the one that wanted to travel as well, and so we went to Europe together. But she. Well, how do you want me to describe her?
I'm trying to get at the sort of the personality type that came to this sort of work. Alaska's a long ways away, and who
Well,
was drawn to that?
she was, I don't really know how she started, got up there, but she was, well, there were several different personalities. One was this one girl who, if we hadn't been a union, I don't think she could have stayed on because she would get nasty with the passengers and everything. But you had to have, because you were in the union, you had to have so many, I guess, complaints and all that kind of thing. We had a couple of girls that were very young and a little bit flighty, I guess. There was another one that she was. There were two of them that were destined to be old maids, I guess you would say, not to get married. There were sisters down in flying out of Seattle that were fantastic. They were really great. In fact, the older sister was the one that was the chief stewardess when I went, she hired me. And they were just, I don't know, just. Glenna was born and raised in Liverpool, and her mother and her brother, one brother I think it was, were on the last ship over from England before the war. And so they were pretty well stuck here. And so she went to school here and stayed. Then her mother went back, but ended up coming back here because she was away from her husband all that length of time, and that, so the marriage was pretty much over. And so Glenna was here, and she hired on in Seattle too, and then was sent to Anchorage, and that's how we got acquainted. And she and I became best friends and roommates and so on. And she was, she had a special thing about her. She was really, that she was a lot of fun. And when we were living together, we had, it was kind of always like open house. And she could take, I remember her feeding about, oh, there must have been 10 people there. And all we had were, I think, four wieners. And she made a sauce and all kinds of stuff. Fed everybody. So she did all the cooking and I did the cleaning. That was good. I don't know. It's hard to explain. There were all different kinds. There were, mostly the girls out of Seattle were more diversified, I would say. Yeah. They were. But every, you know, just about everybody was really into cabin hospitality, trying to make everybody happy. And this one girl was the only one that was, she just get cranky and she'd be huh.
Was she out of Seattle or Alaska?
No, she was out of Seattle.
Out of Seattle.
Yeah,
How
she.
many stewardesses would there be on a plane?
Oh, never more than two
Never mind.
when I was flying.
Was there one sometimes?
Oh, yeah. On the DC-3s, there was only one. Yeah. DC-4s, there were two, and the Connies, there were two. the Connies were really great. That was. Oh, and the Connies, they have this area in the front, right behind the cockpit. And I think there are two seats facing each other on either side. I think. And then that behind was all the regular passengers. We didn't have first and second class, you know. We had one pilot that he'd watch out the cockpit window, the people that were coming on the flight. He had a shoe fetish. And if he saw a woman with a really pretty pair of shoes, he'd have us give her those seats because they're... Yeah. And that's... Oh, and I remember I grew up with my head in a sack from... This might be edited too, I don't know. But anyway, I grew up with my head in a sack from opportunity. And one of my first trips, I was with this girl from Juneau. She was from Juneau, and she grew up right next door, down the street or something, from a whole house. Well, this woman got on flight. She knew immediately who she was, or what she was, I should say. And so she said, and that she was quite inebriated. And she said, "You're going to take care of her." While being junior stewardess, I couldn't argue or say anything. And she was kind of noisy and loud and everything. So I spent most of my time sitting with her, trying to, you know, keep her quieted down. She told me her life history. And Etta would come by and put my... Close your mouth, Ellen. Close your mouth. I was aghast at the things she was telling me. How she got the money to get on the flight. She was on her way to Yakutat because her boyfriend was up there on a fishing boat. And she was going up there to make money, too. Yeah. Oh. And then I went up to the cockpit, to the galley, and our senior pilot was there, and he said... And Etta was teasing me, and I said, I just couldn't believe what I'd heard. And I remember him saying, "Well, it's better, Ellen, it's better to have failed the Wasserman test than never to have loved at all." And I thought, what in the heck does that mean? So I had to go home and try to figure out what he was talking about. But as she was getting ready to get off, she by this time was sobering up. And she wanted to tip me. And I said, "No, we can't take tips." "Honey, you better take this now, because the next time you see me, I probably won't have a dime." And she handed me a $10 bill and wouldn't take it back. So... So some of those things like that, I mean, I grew up, I guess, when I was first started flying.
Did Alaska seem pretty rough and tumble at the time? The people you saw on the planes and so forth?
No, only some of the fishermen, like I say, would get a little rowdy and so on. But there was always another fisherman or somebody on there that would stand up and say, "You leave this little girl alone," or something. And then they were always saying, "You're Scandinavian, aren't you?" "Well, I'm not." And I said, "Well, you might say that." And I said, "What do you mean you might say that?" Because most of them were Scandinavian or whatever, you know, the fishermen. And I said, well, I guess I'm descended from the Vikings because I'm Scottish and English and everything. So they thought that was, I always got along really well with the fishermen because they thought I was one of them, I guess. But we had, I mean, it was a wonderful thing to have done in my life. I just, it was really a lot of fun. And then when we were in, when we were not flying and maybe on the weekends or something, we'd just all get together and go out on the town or, you know, nobody was really with anyone particular. It was just a bunch of people having a good time, which is what made it really nice too. And
so the pilots, the ground crews, the stewardesses, did you all socialize off the job? Did you get along well?
Well, yeah, the ones that got the four parties a year. And it was everybody. I mean, it was the ground crew. It was everybody. So that's really the... some of the ground crew, the older... They were married, so we weren't, we didn't really socialize too much with them other than like at the parties and so on. But we knew everybody and, you know, it was good.
What was your, as chief stewardess, what did that entail?
Oh, you had to, you worked up the flights, and then, you had to schedule all the flights and so on, and then the girls got to bid on them. And then you made sure that all the flights were covered. And I remember sending reports once in a while, not very often. It wasn't a really big job. It was just kind of keeping tabs on things. And I had to do the hiring when they needed the hiring. That's about it, really. It wasn't a, certainly wasn't a big job. Well, and you had to make sure that they towed the line, if, but that was no big problem either, you know, because we didn't have any girls that were bad girls or anything. So, yeah.
When you hired, did you hire out of Anchorage or out of Seattle, or how did that work?
Oh, well, there was ads in the paper in Anchorage and Juneau. And I don't think there were in Seattle. There might have been in Seattle. But there were in Juneau and Anchorage. Because we got some of the girls out of Juneau.
And when they bid for the jobs, was that a seniority?
Hmm?
When they bid for the jobs, was that by seniority?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
The Mr. Woodley?
Woodley.
Woodley? I'll get the spelling from you later. Art Woodley, did he own the airline?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How involved was he on the Alaska end? Did he come up often? Did you see him often?
No, this is the... If he did come up, I never saw him until... it wasn't too long before I was going to be married, so... I'd probably been flying 8 or 9 years, and I was having lunch in the Westward, and Felix Abishan, who was our station manager, was having lunch with Art Woodley, and we kind of teased back and forth. Our, Felix and I did, you know, and I don't know, he said something, I probably said something to him, and he said, and then he said, don't you know who this is? And I said, no. He said, "It's Art Woodley." Well, it's not my fault he didn't bother to introduce himself. And he laughed. Art Woodley laughed. And that was one of the few times I ever met him. So fact, that was the first time I met him.
How much involvement did he have then? Was his involvement something you noticed as you were working from a distance? Or,
no.
Okay, and so this Felix, what was his last name?
Abishan.
Okay, I got that spelling too. What did he do, and how did...
He was the station manager. Mm-hmm. He was in charge of everything on the Anchorage station, and also Kinnick, Homer, Kodiak, and King Salmon. And managed the office, the dispatchers, the stewardess, the secretaries and all that kind of thing. And he was in charge of all that. He was the manager of all that.
And how was he?
Oh, he was wonderful. He was an older man. Or it was to me at the time. He was like a big teddy bear too. He was kind of, everybody got along with him. I think everybody pretty much got along with everyone. We had one secretary at one time, I guess, that wasn't very popular for some reason or other. I don't know, but I never knew her or had anything to do with her. So, but she didn't last very long. I think she was just there for a while. But everybody was, it was just a fantastic group of people, I thought.
How many employees, roughly?
Oh, gee. Well, there was dispatch. Apartment 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 18, 20, 6, 20. Well, I don't think there are more than about 40 people.
Mm-hmm. And what were the different jobs along, like how many stewardesses were there?
Well, it varied, but we usually had about nine, mm-hmm. somewhere in there, if I remember correctly. There'd be Eddie, Noni, Lena, myself. Yeah, about eight.
And then what were the other jobs? Dispatch, I assume mechanics, pilots?
Yeah, we had the A&E mechanics, and we had the ground crew. I only knew two of the mechanics well. The ground crew would probably be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are about 7 or 8 ground crew, I guess. The pilots, I am probably 8. There. Let me see. Probably around 8 pilots. And then there is Felix and 2 girls, Betty, dispatchers. I think around 4. That's another 8. 8. So 8. Anywhere from 35 to 40, I would say, people.
And you flew out of Merrill Field, I presume?
No.
No?
No, it was always Anchorage.
That was, okay, that was open by then.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, but the terminal building was much, much smaller. It was, yeah. There was the some offices on the main floor that were, and then you went up the stairs to dispatch, and we had and that's where the offices and so on were, and then their SAS ran out of the had a an office downstairs, and of course there's Wien and Alaska, Northwest. They all flew out of, but no, I think we had the largest offices, the most offices.
How did the different airline, the employees from the different airlines, did you all interact quite a bit?
We interacted some, yeah. Went skiing and so on with some of them from SAS, and that one girl. And then, yeah, it was, we would ski together and stuff like that, you know. Oh, and then Bob Reeves Aleutian. I have his book and reading about his life and when he was flying. And one of the things it says in there that he didn't, when he started his airline, he didn't really think that he needed to get uniforms or anything for his people, particularly the girls. And so when his chief stewardess and I, she came and asked me about making up a manual. We had the manual and everything, so I was helping her with that. And she was telling me that they were trying to get him to get him uniforms. And Bob was really tight. And it wasn't going anywhere. So they were having a Navy ball over in Kodiak. And they invited all the stewardesses and everybody. So Bob and his wife Tilly and his two daughters were on my flight going over. I happened to be working the flight. And my girlfriend, Noni, she had just bought a mink stole from one of the gals who was always a passenger that we all got acquainted with. She was, she sold to the BOQs, or is it the B, to the military. She sold to the military commissaries, or what do they call them, where they buy. And she had gotten Noni this mink stole at cost or something, or that, I don't know what it was. So Noni was going to the Navy ball on that same flight and was wearing her stole. Well, Tilly and the girls were already on the plane, and Bob was coming across the tarmac. I saw him coming, and so I said, Noni, can I borrow your stole? And he said, sure. So I put her stole around me, and as he came up the steps, I said, hello, Mr. Reeve. How do you like our new uniforms? And he went up and sat down with Tilly, and about every 10 minutes, he'd punch the button and say, stewardess, there's a dead cat on this airplane. I could smell a dead cat. Every 10 minutes all the way across, he was telling me there was a dead animal on the flight. So we had fun. Yeah.
So you knew Bob Reeves fairly well, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Any other good stories about him?
Well, he and my husband got to be really close because my husband opened the first brokerage house in Alaska and in Anchorage, and he became
microphone there. It's getting under your shirt. Huh? The microphone's kind of getting under your shirt there. Maybe adjust it a little.
Better.
Yeah. There you go.
Anyway, he. He was quite a guy. Another thing with Bob Reeve, and I never did get him to exchange with me, but he wore this ratty old parka. I think it was muskrat and something else. I don't know what it was made of. But anyway, and so I used to tease him all the time, and I said I'd trade my top coat for his parka. He never would do that. I don't know why. Yeah, he was fun. He had a good sense of humor. And Tilly was just a sweetheart. She was fun. We were at a cocktail party one time, and I was talking to Tilly, and this man was facing me and behind Tilly, and he was smiling and waving and being really cutesy, and I didn't know what, I had never seen him before. I didn't know what was going on. So pretty soon he came up to me and he said, "You are Evangeline Atwood, aren't you?" Well, Evangeline Atwood, you know who she was. Yeah. I said, "No, Tilly, you could have heard her all the way to the other side of town. She just hooped and thought that was the funniest thing in the world." She was, well, another thing, tell you how tired you, he never gave up his, from what I understood anyway, they lived in this little house in Anchorage with an old wood stove, and he would never get rid of the wood stove for Tilly. He liked his old wood stove. Hmm. She didn't need one. So, yeah, he was quite a guy. And I have two sets of glasses, water glasses, that he had made up for different anniversaries of his airline, so, that he gave us. That's really nice. It was a magical time in a way, mm-hmm. You know? It really was.
What was your first impression of Alaska when you first came?
Oh, God. It was April. It was during breakup. And it was dirty and scrub spruce, and of course it's not anything like Anchorage is now, you know. Oil companies, I can't remember which one it was, had a little building built out on what is that? Arctic, isn't it?
Arctic Boulevard?
Yeah, and then what's the other one after that? Yeah. I don't know. Which is right downtown now. But there were no paved streets, and we went out there for a cocktail party one time, and it was so muddy and we could hardly get there. It was like going to the boondocks, you know? Can I
take a break?